You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The Green Desk is back. This week, Francis spoke with Megan Williams, a sustainability advocate from the TIA, about the Sustainability Tourism Commitment. Here she is now.
With days reaching record high temperature numbers overseas, and the Twitter community recently deeming Kylie Jenner a climate criminal after taking a 17-minute flight on her private jet, the climate crisis remains front of mind. Speaking of planes, this week on The Green Desk, we're talking travel. As the borders begin to open back up, the tourism industry in Aotearoa is slowly recovering from its painful pandemic pause. But the planet is still warming, and we have a long way to go to reach our climate goals. This week, I spoke with Megan Williams. She's a sustainability advocate at Tourism Industry Aotearoa, or the TIA. We spoke about the Tourism Sustainability Commitment, which aims to see every New Zealand tourism business committed to sustainability by 2025. We talked about tourism sustainability for small operators, larger systematic change, and how we ourselves can do our bit when we're out and about. I began by asking Megan to outline the elements of the Tourism Sustainability Commitment.
The Tourism Sustainability Commitment is a framework for the tourism industry to be able to know what they could be doing and to kind of put all their sustainability practices within a framework. It was launched in 2017, and at the moment we have about 1,600 businesses and organisations around the Motu who have signed up to that commitment. It's based on the UN Sustainable Development Goals, but it's kind of been made relevant for New Zealand and relevant for the tourism sector. And by that I mean it's got like four pillars. And so instead of the three traditional pillars in sustainability, it's got environment and economic. And then the social aspect is broken down into a community and a visitor aspect. And each of those four pillars has three commitments. So we have 12 commitments in total.
And what are some of the biggest pressures that tourism puts on the planet and perhaps on New Zealand specifically?
Well, I think it's really that people have a herd mentality, right? So everyone wants to go to the same places at the same time. They want to go to that beach on the hottest day of the summer. They want to go to that, you know, to Milford Sound at the best time. So, you know, everyone wants to go there between 10 and 2 during the day. So a lot of the time it's not too many people, but it's too many people at the same time. So that's, I guess, the first thing. But so that's kind of some of the overcrowding issues. But then the big elephant in the room for tourism is the greenhouse gas emissions created by flights for people getting places. And, of course, to New Zealand, way out here in our corner of the globe, pretty much most people, unless you're on a cruise ship, need to fly here. So that is a big pressure. There's a lot of greenhouse gas that are being emitted for people to get here before they even travel around our country.
Do you have any examples of tourism operators that have signed on to the commitment and have really shifted what they do to adhere to those elements of commitment to sustainability?
Oh, gosh, loads. So for all of our businesses, they're all kind of starting at a different start point, if you like, and it's a continual process. So what we want them to be doing is keeping moving the dial, if you like, and upping the ante of what they're doing. But, you know, there's some great examples out there. Just last year we worked with East by West Ferries, for example, in Wellington, and you may be aware, but they've just introduced the first operational electric ferry in Wellington Harbour. And that is just a massive game changer. So while that wasn't a result of our work together, we worked with them to create, I guess, wraparound to make sure all of the other things they were doing in their business were looking at what they were doing in their community, other environmental kind of aspects, what they were doing for visitors, just so that it wasn't just about an electric boat, but they were kind of looking at their holistic sustainability footprint. So that's one example, but, you know, there are so many. Real NZ So, you know, they, you know, just looking at maybe Treble Cone and Cadrona ski fields, you know, they've taken a huge approach to reducing their carbon footprint and their waste footprint. You know, they've gone for no rubbish on the mountain. So they don't even have rubbish bins for skiers anymore. That's happened now for 2 years. They got rid of everything on that's selling on the mountain that produced rubbish. So, you know, you can't buy a plastic bottle of water, you know, you'll find drinking fountains and reusable cups. None of the food that's served up there is producing any rubbish. It's either crockery or something compostable that they then compost themselves. So it's a huge commitment from a big company that's rolling out a whole lot of stuff throughout their different organisations. And then you've got, you know, little accommodation providers, like I'm just thinking the Ballcock Suites, again in Wellington, who, you know, changed all of their room amenities to local products, to bulk products, so that's not creating all of that waste. But they went beyond that and they've stopped doing automatic room service. So you actually pay more. So if you're staying for 3 nights, you know, you're in Wellington on business, you don't need your bed made every day and your carpet vacuumed. So they've stopped service, which has obviously saved a whole lot of energy. It's so it's saved chemicals, water, and it's also good for them at the moment with a staffing crisis, because they don't need as many cleaners. So there are lots and lots of examples of businesses that are chipping away at doing lots of little things that add up to great results.
Obviously, as you say, this is an ongoing thing. You know, we've still got a long way to go. So what does your role look like in continuing to stand beside these businesses and educate them about how they can take further steps to contribute to our sustainability?
Yeah, well, we're kind of constantly evolving how we support. So we're an industry association, TIA, and we, you know, we have a membership, but we're kind of also an umbrella, I guess, advocacy group for the tourism sector. So there's lots of things that we can do at a structural level, which we'll talk about in a minute. But in terms of an operator level, obviously we've got information on our website. We go and do presentations to groups of members in different regions through our regional tourism organisations. We also run bespoke programs. So we're working in regions with clusters of businesses, you know, the 12, 15 businesses at a time, where we work with them over 3 months and actually visit their business, give them an individualised action plan for what they can do in all over all of our 12 commitments, and then help them along that journey for a few weeks and kind of give them masterclasses on what they can do in some of these areas, how to do it, walk them through doing their carbon footprint and reducing their carbon so that, you know, the hassle's taken out of it. Because you've got to remember, a lot of tourism businesses are small, medium, and even micro businesses. So they don't have the time. They're already doing 101 things. So by going through a program, it brings it up their priority list and they get that one-on-one contact with an expert who can help them to chunk down all of these kind of things and make it relevant for their own business.
And aside from those individual businesses, let's talk about the bigger systematic issues. Could you begin by explaining what some of those are and then what you're implementing on a national level to make a change there?
Sure. So as an organisation, we have put out a carbon challenge to the sector. So obviously we, you know, all business wants to be reducing carbon and ideally before we're mandated to do so by government. And so we're kind of challenging the sector that we really need to do our part and we need to significantly reduce emissions by 2030. We've put that challenge out and we're working kind of, again, at a regional level, helping certain regions and sectors on ways that they can do that in their own business or their own sector or their own region. Also doing things at a structural level, like working with the carbon accounting providers who hadn't actually really got together before. And, you know, we're working with them on how to better serve our tourism and hospitality sectors, how to get the messaging clearer, how to have more consistency across different carbon accounting tools, etc., so that it improves the system and it makes it much easier for people. The work that I talked about that we do in regions, we're also, it's helping us find passionate people out there who want to, they've done as much as they can in their own business, but they've got an opportunity now to help at a bigger sector level. So at the moment, for example, I'm working with someone and we're raising funds to get a carbon tool for menus for restaurants and cafes. And, you know, that really will be a game changer if and when we get that off the ground, because, you know, not only is it educating the cafe owners, the chefs who are putting together menus about a carbon footprint of that particular meal, it's also raising the issue with consumers who often will sit down at a, you know, and choose a meal not thinking about the carbon footprint of that meal and not realising but that their choice can make a huge difference in their eating habits. So, you know, those kinds of things that come out of our work can really create big change in reducing carbon and on the whole system.
And are people in general, I mean, operators and visitors, are they on board with this? Like, are you receiving quite positive feedback and people really wanting to get involved with implementing sustainable tourism practices?
Operators certainly are. With having 1,600 operators signed up is fantastic. It's hard to know how many of them are actually actively working on, you know, their action plans. I mean, we've got pretty good data for about 600 or 700 of them, but, you know, some of them we just don't get any feedback from. But I think especially for some of our smaller businesses, the COVID period has been a time where they've been able to get on with making these changes in their businesses, if you like, pivoting and doing something a little bit different. People's values have changed. So operators, absolutely. Visitors, I think we do have a bit of an issue, and I think we see it everywhere, that consumers leave their good habits at home when they go on holiday, and we're probably all guilty of that. You know, just think recycling, you know, laziness with not turning heaters off when you're not paying the bill, all of that stuff. So there is a bit of work, I think, to deal with visitors who, when they're travelling and not at home. And I'm not sure what the answer to that is yet. So there's a job for some young, bright student to figure out how do we fix people's behaviour. But, you know, it is evident in international research that Booking.com and others have done that the values have changed over this COVID period, and people are more likely to choose sustainable products nowadays when they travel. You know, there is a demand for it. People have, you know, I'm just thinking Booking.com, I think it was about 63% of Kiwis said that they wanted to travel more sustainably over the next 12 months. And I think 72% of global travellers said they wanted to stay in a sustainable property once at least over their next trip. So that's some good signals, but whether or not people vote or choose, you know, and spend their money wisely is probably yet to be seen.
Let's talk about the pandemic a little bit. If we think back pre-pandemic, I'm thinking like places like the Milford Sound were experiencing huge numbers of tourists using the infrastructure. I was down there, I think, the other week, and one of my bus drivers said that there were just these masses of numbers using that roadway. Those numbers are no doubt detrimental to both infrastructure, like those roadways, and also the environment. Do you think the pause on tourism during the pandemic is changing the way that tourism is done going forward?
Good question. I think yes and no. Some things will change, but probably not as many as what I would have hoped. I think many of us have had big hopes that the government would be able to do some kind of reset and fix some of the structural issues that we have in tourism, and that hasn't happened. So it is a missed opportunity in some aspects. So, but there definitely is more intent from the industry itself. I mean, you know, I've been working in this space for over 20 years, and things do go in cycles. But I think, you know, even before the pandemic, there was a real upsurge of people wanting to change the sector and do better for our environment and do better for our communities. And I think government can't solve every problem for us. There's a lot of bigger fish to fry at the moment with water reforms and health and education and everything else. So as an industry, we need to do it ourselves. And there is a lot of intent, As an industry association, we're certainly at the forefront of that with our board and our CEO involved in a lot of projects to improve the sector. So see what I mean? It's kind of a bit of yes and a bit of no in there.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to touch on briefly another quite pressing issue at the moment, which is the global cost of living crisis. Do you think that will affect the way that people travel at all?
Well, unfortunately, I think it will affect things. And I think the world in some ways might become a bit of a rich person's playground. You know, I think that division between the wealthy and the poor is, as we know, widening, and that is going to play out in things like travel even more. I think it's probably good for the planet, but not good for society as a whole, and for the majority of people who travel will become more expensive. In saying that, though, I think our habits will change. So, you know, I think we'll probably go back to going, still travelling, but a lot less frequently, and perhaps go and do the old-fashioned OE where you actually go overseas and you might stay over there for 4 or 5 years and then travel by train and slowly in quite, you know, low carbon manner, and then come home. I think, you know, over the last probably 20 years, it's got pretty ridiculous, really. People fly across the world to go to a party. And they might, you know, take a long haul flight 6 or 7 times a year. And so I think that kind of behaviour will change, except for the very rich, because the prices are going to probably always stay high. There might be a period where they do stabilise, but I think once we put the true cost of the carbon footprint onto flights, which I think eventually will happen, then it is going to be more expensive.
Finally, as the borders start to open back up, and if listeners are lucky enough to be travelling either overseas or within New Zealand, and they're concerned about the impact on the environment, is there anything practical they can do to ensure their travels involve sustainable practices?
Well, we can't all go on a yacht like Greta did across to North America. Obviously, that's something we can do, but it's not really practical for everybody. So what I would say is plan to go for longer, just what I said. Travel slowly. Don't try and flit around everywhere. Go travel slowly. Take the most sustainable forms of travel that you can within a country. And a big one, I think, is book direct with local operators. So search out local little organisations that are giving back to their local communities and are in tune with what the type of tourism that their local communities want. And it's pretty obvious to have a look when you look on their website. I think also to be really mindful of how you book. And, you know, the travel sector is changing, but I just want people to be aware that a lot of online travel agencies are just really benefiting shareholders overseas. A lot of the money is leaked out of New Zealand and is ending up elsewhere. So by all means, use those online travel agencies, those big ones, for research about what you might do and the best prices, and then go direct to those little operators, because more of the money retains with them that can then be spent in those communities for families rather than benefiting shareholders of large corporations.
That was Megan Williams from the TIA speaking to me about what sustainable tourism looks like in New Zealand at the moment. That's us for the Green Desk this week. Thanks for tuning in.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/becasts.